Hello, and welcome to X-Men Unraveled, the podcast that follows the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. I'm your host, Noelle. Happy New Year to everyone, and I hope you all had a wonderful holiday season. I had a birthday on top of the holidays, so it's been a busy few weeks since my last episode, but I'm excited for the new year and a bunch of fun episodes. I'm not really a New Year's resolution type of person, but I do like the feeling of starting over with a brand new year. And this year, because other parts of my life have settled down a little bit, I really want to focus on the podcast and X-Men reading generally. I've spent the past month or so reading through all of the Krakoa-era comics because I've been hit and miss on keeping up with them, and reading that in parallel with the 60s issues can be quite jarring, but it's a lot of fun to read them and kind of see them side by side to see who our current characters turn out to be. Today I'm covering three issues of Uncanny X-Men, numbers 19 to 21. We've got an introduction to a new villain named Mimic in the first issue, then a two-issue story about a plot hatched by Xavier's old nemesis, Lucifer. He co-opts the Blob and Unus the Untouchable into his plans as well. So without further ado, let's get started. Our first issue today is Uncanny X-Men number 19, and the cover shows a man in a yellow leotard with wings, a visor, and giant feet standing on a railing covered in ice. So nearly all of the X-Men's powers are present on the cover with the villain. There's text at the bottom of the page that reads, "Is the Mimic another mutant, or something far worse?" And this, of course, is the issue's new villain, the Mimic. It's about two-thirds through the issue before we learn who this villain is and how he got his powers, but I'm actually going to start with his origin and then run through the issue. Mimic's real name is Calvin Rankin. His father was a scientist and had a lab in their house where he conducted all of his experiments. Does not sound safe. Charles Xavier's stepfather had done the same thing. I don't understand what's wrong with these guys. As you would expect, one day while his father was out of the house, Calvin went into the lab to look around, as children do, and he accidentally knocks over a beaker, which releases gas all through the room when it breaks. Once the gas clears, Calvin is okay physically, so he cleans up the mess and gets out of the lab without his father knowing about the incident. But Calvin starts noticing some changes afterward. Now he's able to fight as well as his school's boxing champion, plays baseball as well as the best players, and excel academically without trying. He knew as much as his teachers. Because of this, he starts feeling superior to his classmates, who obviously start to dislike him. They complain that it doesn't seem right that one kid could be the top athlete and the top student. Calvin doesn't help himself much either, he just becomes more arrogant and defensive. So he's not making friends. Eventually, Calvin's father learns about the incident in the lab and that his son's abilities are making him a target. He secretly moves them into an abandoned mine, part of which is converted into an underground house and a new lab, where he thinks he'll be able to keep his son safe. So Calvin's powers are to mimic the abilities of those around him, whether they're human or mutant. But when he gets too far away from the person he's mimicking, he loses the abilities that he copied. At the mine, Papa Rankin, we don't know his real name, starts work on a machine that he says will make Calvin's borrowed powers permanent. But before they can use it, the machine starts draining too much power from the surrounding area and causes a blackout. The nearby residents come to investigate, but not peacefully. They've got guns and plan to take out whoever caused the outage, which does not seem like a reasonable or rational response. When they get to the mine, Calvin's father sets off explosives to seal the mine entrance shut, but he ends up getting caught in the blast and killed. Calvin survives and escapes, buries his father, and makes a plan to uncover the machine and become the most powerful man in the world, and get vengeance for his father. In this story, it's fairly straightforward that Calvin Rankin is a mutate rather than a mutant, But later, over the years, this is put into question, and it's debated by other characters. In the much more recent House of X number 5 from 2019, Mimic is referenced as a mutant. But for today's issue, Mimic is clearly understood to be a mutate. Another thing I want to mention is that in Dark X-Men The Beginning number 1 from 2009, Calvin Rankin is also said to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. This diagnosis takes place much later, and at the time of today's issue, Rankin has never been diagnosed or prescribed medication. But I do feel like it's important to mention in order to understand the character and some of his reactions that we'll see. So, with that bit of backstory on our main villain, let's get to Uncanny X-Men number 19 itself. As usual, the issue opens up with the team training. Iceman is throwing ice javelins, Beast is doing some acrobatics, Angel's flying around, and Marvel Girl is levitating in the air and reading a book. Cyclops is still filling in as the team coach during training sessions, but Professor Xavier interrupts and tells them that they've done enough for the day and that he has an announcement for them, that they've earned a little vacation. In a very recent issue, we heard Xavier promise a vacation to the team and it fell through, and things go about just as well this time. Bobby and Hank take off, and rather than make their way straight to Coffee a Go-Go, they go to the library. They are there to meet up with Zelda, the waitress from Coffee a Go-Go, and her friend for a double date. Inside the library, Hank is perusing preschool books for some reason, and when the librarian points it out, he starts bickering with her. To make things awkward, it turns out that she is the friend that Zelda set him up with, Vera Cantor. They all head outside and start walking up the street when Vera recognizes a man that's walking towards them. She says his name is Calvin Rankin and that he's been wanting to go out with her but has a temper. When they cross paths, Rankin immediately starts harassing Vera, saying that she didn't have time for a date with him, but now here she is with somebody else. Hank jumps in to respond, but Vera interrupts and shoots back that she doesn't have to answer to Rankin for anything. Rankin does not like her response and gets mad. His face turns completely red, and when Hank tries to calm things down, Calvin takes a swing at him. Hank is able to dodge the punch, but when he takes a swing himself, Rankin is able to dodge just as quickly. Rankin then leaps into the air and kicks Hank in the back of the head, knocking him to the ground. Bobby then rushes over and grabs Rankin's shoulder, but Rankin suddenly slings a snowball in Bobby's face. There's a construction crew nearby who sees this whole incident, and they believe that Rankin is a mutant attacking two humans. And they chase after Rankin, who's able to escape by climbing up the side of a building like Beast would. When he's alone, Rankin remembers that two of the X-Men have the powers that he just used, so he's discovered the identities of two members of the team, Iceman and Beast. With that information, he plans to find the rest of them and defeat the team. But as he gets further from the two X-Men, his mimicked powers start to fade. In the next scene, we see Jean out and about shopping, because what else would a girl do with her day off? She's got a box and a bag full of stuff already, so she stops by a restaurant to eat. She accidentally runs into a man who's carrying a tray, and of course, it's Rankin. He is unreasonably mad and starts berating her for her manners. Jean rushes away, and then Rankin goes to sit down at a table, thinking to himself, nutty females, they're all alike, because we can't go an issue without blatant misogyny. Yes, I know it's the 60s, but it's still very irritating. Rankin then notices that there is no sugar on his table for coffee. He looks at another table and sees that there is sugar, and he starts wishing that it had been placed on his table, and as he does, it levitates over to him. He realizes he's managed to find another X-Man and decides to follow Jean to get to the rest of the team. The next day, Hank and Bobby are sharing their encounter with Xavier, telling him how Rankin had their exact powers. Xavier's interested in the information, but says Cerebro hasn't alerted to the presence of any new mutants. But as they're talking, the doorbell rings, and Xavier is able to mentally recognize that Rankin has arrived. Hank opens the door, and Rankin says that he's sorry for the incident the day before and wants to join them. He comes inside, meets the team, And as he introduces himself to each of them, he also gains their powers. In addition to getting Beast and Iceman's powers, Rankin's able to mimic Xavier's telepathy and prevent Xavier from reading his mind. He also gains Jean's telekinesis, wings like Angel, and Scott's optic beam. He is already prepared and wearing sunglasses. Then I guess just to be creepy, he reveals to Jean that he found the team by following her. Bobby and Hank do shake Rankin's hand, but both of them let him know that they are not happy to see him. Xavier lets Rankin use one of the guest rooms, and while he's away, tells the X-Men to change into their costumes. Upstairs, Rankin is doing the same thing. He wears a red and orange getup with an M for mimic on his chest, and we can see that he's been able to mimic all of the X-Men's powers at the same time. Rankin then goes back downstairs and challenges the X-Men. They start a fight, the X-Men win, but then he grabs Jean and carries her away. And Xavier orders the rest of the team not to attack. He drives Jean back to his hideout at the mine, and on the way he starts to lose all of his powers except for Jean's telekinesis. Xavier and the other X-Men get into their helicopter, and Xavier tells them that he wanted to let Rankin get away so they can find his base. And pretty callously letting Jean be caught by this asshole. Rankin and Jean arrive back to the mine, which Rankin appears to have never moved out of, and Jean asks why Rankin would be living there. And that's when he tells his story of becoming the mimic and his goal to make his powers permanent with the machine his father built. Rankin then leaves Jean while he goes to uncover the machine, which is still buried in the rubble from the explosion that killed his father. When the rest of the X-Men get close to the mine, he's able to tell because he starts manifesting all of their powers again, and he's able to use Scott's optic beam to dig through the rubble and get to the machine. The X-Men make it inside the cave and rescue Jean, and they find Rankin just as he's about to turn on the machine. They fight again, and as all of the X-Men are down, Rankin grabs Xavier and flies towards the machine. Surprisingly at this point, Xavier then orders the X-Men to hold off their attack. Rankin starts gloating as the machine starts up, but after it goes off, he falls to the ground and the machine begins to overload. The X-Men grab Rankin and escape the cave before the machine explodes and collapses the mine. Xavier reveals that he caused the machine to short-circuit and explode. Somehow, through his telepathy, it's not really how it works, but we're going with it. Then they see that Rankin has returned to normal despite his proximity to the mutants. Xavier tells the team that Rankin's father never planned on making his son's powers permanent. They would just lead to more trouble, and so he built the machine to take them away. It's unclear how exactly Xavier knew this because Rankin has his telepathy. He couldn't read his mind, but he figured it out somehow. And of course, it's not a story until somebody has their memory wiped, so Xavier erases Rankin's memory of everything that has happened and sends him off to live a normal life. Mimic will return in a few issues under different circumstances, but for now, the X-Men have stopped his vengeful rampage and he has a chance at a new start. This next story comes from issues 20 and 21 of Uncanny X-Men, and we've got the return of three villains, Lucifer, Unus, and the Blob. A quick recap, since all of these characters are making their reappearance, Lucifer is the alien that caused Xavier to lose the use of his legs. Last time we saw him was in issue number 9, and the X-Men left him defeated and unable to carry out his plans of world domination. Unus the Untouchable, who has the power of surrounding himself with a force field, was defeated in issue 8 when Beast created a device that overloaded his powers to the point he was unable to eat or even sit on a chair. Unus had promised not to return to villainy, so the X-Men would not use the device on him again. And the Blob, who really has only been a victim of the X-Men up to this point, left us in issue number 7 when he was sick of all the other mutants' shit and went back to being a carnival entertainer. In these two issues, Lucifer has contrived for the Blob and Unus to draw out the X-Men so he can get his revenge on Xavier and the team. Xavier might have Cerebro, but Lucifer has developed his own ultra scanner that leads him to the location of the Blob and Unus. He is able to influence events as they enter a wrestling match against each other. It ends in a draw as they realize that their mutant powers counteract each other. And they end up hanging out, getting a drink, and the conversation leads to the X-Men. They realize they both have reasons to hate the team, so they hatch a plot to frame them for crimes. However, Lucifer has developed a device to control others from a distance and is responsible for planting this idea in their minds. Issue number 20 opens up with the Blob and Unus wearing X-Men uniforms and robbing a bank. They've got the customers held hostage, and the civilians are easily convinced that these two are new X-Men. When the Blob demands that the bank manager open the vault, the man informs him that he can't, it's on a timer, and it won't open till 10. Rather than wait around, though, Blob rips the door of the vault straight off the hinges and hands Unus a giant bag of money, which of course has a dollar sign on the side, just for good measure. I guess they're worried they might get it mixed up with their laundry or something. Just then, a security guard sees that the villains are distracted with the money, so he fires his gun at each of them. The bullets sink into Blob's body before falling uselessly to the ground, and then they just ricochet off Unus's force field. Blob then grabs the gun and crushes it in his hand. By now, the police have gathered outside, but the villains' powers allow them to basically just walk through without any trouble, and they jump in their car and drive away with the stolen cash. Back at the X-Mansion, the first scene we see is Scott Summers packing his belongings into a small suitcase. He has decided to leave the X-Men in order to find a doctor who can cure him of his powers. He writes a note for the team and thinks sadly about leaving Jean behind, but he believes that his powers make him too much of a danger, so he leaves the mansion alone. It's quite melodramatic, but I do actually feel really bad for Scott. He's such a familiar and long-standing character that I think the inconvenience and danger of his powers can be kind of easy to overlook or just forget. Compared to the rest of the team, though, his powers really do stand out. Angel might have wings that are difficult to hide, but they give him the power to fly, a deal I think most people would be willing to make. And although it looks quite uncomfortable, he is able to hide his wings under his clothes and pass as human. Beast at this time is also able to hide the physical manifestations of his powers, and he could probably dominate numerous Olympic categories with his strength and agility. And then there's Jean and Bobby, who are able to call on their powers as they choose, along with being able to pass as human. Scott can pass as human as well, even if it is often as a douche who won't take off his sunglasses inside, but his powers have to be kept constantly under control at the risk of causing damage or injury to anything or anyone around him. There's a lot of times where he can seem like a real stick in the mud, but he spends pretty much every waking moment trying to keep the people around him safe from the danger he could cause. So he's reached the breaking point and leaves to find a way to free himself of this burden. The rest of the team has no idea yet. They are busy focused on the news on the television about a bank robbery supposedly committed by their team. They all rush to tell Xavier, who's already got Cerebro up and running, revealing the culprits to be the Blob and Unus. Beast is especially pissed off to hear that Unus is back on his bullshit, because he threatened to use the ray gun that defeated him last time if Unus went back to his criminal ways. But Xavier says he also senses a third person who has masterminded the scheme to discredit the X-Men. He tries to uncover the identity of this mystery villain with his telepathy, and Jean exclaims that she just noticed that Scott isn't with them. "I have also had a crush, Jean. I know that you've known it this whole time. It's fine." Bobby leaves the room to go find their second in command and discovers the letter that Scott left. Xavier merely reacts by saying, "I suspected as much. Scott has seemed terribly distraught these past few weeks, but no time to worry about that now." Just complete dickishness all around here from him. Xavier is the adult. He's the leader. If he knows that, why has he not been helping Scott more? Like spending some time with him, talking him through things? I don't know. Xavier, I guess, is just so focused on his crusade that he lets one of his students languish. And also, he doesn't even give the other X-Men a second to process what just happened. Their friend and interim leader is gone. Like, give them a minute, Charles. But I'm not surprised. He acted just as callously when Hank tried to leave the team, and he basically blew off that concern. These poor teenagers. Xavier ends up unable to determine who the brains behind the robbery is, but we get our first look at Lucifer, who's got a new base and watches from a distance as his plans come to fruition. Meanwhile, back in the city, Scott happens across the Blob and Unis, who are in the middle of robbing an armored car. He recognizes his two former foes right away, despite their outfits. And for a second, he thinks about moving along and not getting involved, since he's given up being part of the X-Men. But when he hears a crowd of onlookers disparage all mutants because of the crime, he decides he has to help for the sake of mutants generally. So he changes into his own costume and confronts the two villains. Blob and Unis try to play it off like Cyclops is in on the crime, but Cyclops uses his optic beam to cut through the bag of cash. Unis and the Blob go on the attack, but it isn't long before the crowd of humans turns on all three of them. Scott, familiar with mobs, decides it's time to get out of there and get to safety. As the Blob and Unis are picking up their cash off the ground, Angel, Beast, and Iceman arrive. Beast immediately goes after Unis with his ray gun that should overload Unis's powers, but this time when he uses it, there's no effect. Somehow Lucifer has given Unis an immunity to it. So with Plan A failing, the mutants start fighting, but things quickly get out of hand when the crowd of humans starts attacking the X-Men as well as the villains. The mob tries to grab Iceman, an old lady hits Beast over the head with an umbrella, and a cop shoots at Angel. Things are looking pretty dicey as the Blob and Unis go on the attack as well. Luckily, Cyclops has returned and he's able to cut a hole through the ground, sending Blob and Unis falling into the subway below. This is the last we will see of them for a minute. Lucifer has been watching all of this from his new base, which is somewhere in the southwestern United States, and he's angry that Xavier hasn't arrived, because that's who he's really after. But Lucifer has equipped the base with a Mento ray that starts going off, indicating that Xavier is trying to mentally locate him. And then we see a giant red dome appear from the top of a large mesa with a cannon pointed out of the top. It shoots a wave of energy that follows Xavier's powers back to his location. At the mansion, Xavier is using a machine to locate Lucifer, and has once again kept Jean behind for some reason, when he suddenly starts screaming that his brain is on fire. Lucifer's weapon has found its target, and Xavier is left stunned and unable to move or speak. His powers are also very weakened, but he's able to instruct Jean how to use his mental wave amplifier so she can more easily hear his thoughts. He reveals that once again they're facing Lucifer, and despite the clear danger, he takes his time revealing the story of how he fought Lucifer when he was younger, and that that's how he lost the use of his legs. This takes almost a full 5 pages, and at a pretty high-stakes moment, but that clearly doesn't bother Xavier. Lucifer, on the other hand, is feeling quite proud of himself and sets out to complete his real mission. The first time he met Xavier, Lucifer had taken control of the minds of all the people in a single city through the use of a machine. Now he has improved its capability to the point that it can reach all over the world. So he video calls back to his home government and informs his leader, the Supreme One, that the time has come for Dominus and their conquest of Earth. I couldn't help think of Invader Zim at this point, if you ever watched that, where he's always calling back to the Almighty Tallis to say that he's about to conquer the world. But Lucifer's leader agrees and says that humans will face the coming of Dominus. No further explanation is provided at this point about who or what Dominus might be. The X-Men have regrouped back at the mansion, with Jean filling in the rest of the team on the identity of their enemy and Xavier's weakened state. She then relays instructions from Xavier for a beam distorter for Beast to build. It turns out to look like a fishbowl that Xavier places over his head, but it blocks the weapon that Lucifer is using. Then Xavier has the team load up in a brand new private jet he just bought to take the fight to Lucifer. The cover of Uncanny X-Men number 21 gives us a hint about what Dominus might be, as the X-Men face off with a giant green robot on the cover. Lucifer looks on and appears very Magneto-esque in a red and purple getup, but he's got a mask that covers all of his face except for his mouth and chin. Professor Xavier is flying the X-Men in their new jet towards Lucifer's base. It's got to be a long flight from New York to the southwestern US, but they get closer and get to the location of the base, but there's a force field that puts them through some pretty severe turbulence, so they can't get closer. The jet rebalances, and then the mutants see a beam of yellow light from outer space appear and like beam down to the mesa where Lucifer has hidden his base. Inside the light, they see several large objects that travel down the beam to the Earth. But they aren't the only ones who see this strange sight. Several men from a nearby ranch jump onto their horses and head out to investigate as well. The X-Men fly the jet over to the top of the mesa to try and land, but the top is obscured by what they call opalescent gases, so they aren't able to see what's below. Xavier flies towards the opening still, but two giant geysers shoot up, nearly hitting the jet. So they jump into a hovercraft and leave the jet on autopilot so they can get closer to the ground to investigate. They start climbing down the mesa, but then the ranchers who saw the light spot them. They recognize the X-Men, but apparently are not fans. They immediately start shooting at them. Cyclops uses his powers to take out the path that the men are traveling on, and they and their horses fall to some water below. The horses appear to be fine, and so do the ranchers. Angel grabs the leader, Mr. Mac, and Iceman freezes him into a block of ice, and they put him on his horse to return home. All the other men had kind of scattered after falling. Then the X-Men are able to see a way into the heart of the mesa down the river that the ranchers had fallen into. Iceman builds a raft for them to float, but when they get inside a large cave, they're suddenly caught in a giant whirlpool. Angel, Cyclops, and Marvel Girl end up trapped and fall into this giant clear box. Beast ends up pulled from the water by a giant yellow and green robot, and when Iceman tries to save him, there's a second robot, and he's captured as well. Xavier, meanwhile, had stayed behind to explore the area outside the mesa, and he's trying to telepathically reach out to the team, but ends up too distracted to notice two more robots sneak up behind him. They tie his arms down and fly away with him. The robots bring Xavier before Lucifer at the base of a giant machine inside the mesa, and this machine fills up like the entirety of the interior. Lucifer explains to Xavier that this machine is called Dominus, and it will allow him to enslave humanity. Xavier's like, that's no problem, the X-Men are going to defeat you. But then Lucifer shows him that the team is already captured. So Xavier insults Dominus and says it won't be able to conquer the Earth. And this is the moment that Lucifer has been waiting for, to monologue about his brilliant plan. He explains that Dominus has allowed his species to conquer and enslave numerous planets, and the machine is run by specially created robots. The yellow and green ones we've seen already, and who have captured the team. Xavier claims that he doesn't believe Lucifer, so the alien shows him the last planet that his species conquered. All of its inhabitants have had their wills taken away, and now serve Lucifer's species as automatons. Meanwhile, the X-Men are still trapped in the giant clear box, and this is very similar to the Sentinel story. But this time, Jean is able to use her telekinesis to pull a lever that opens the cage, and Cyclops is able to take out a nearby robot. The X-Men make their way through Lucifer's base toward the chamber where Lucifer is still talking to Xavier. As they get closer, they hear Xavier communicate with them telepathically and instructs them not to damage the machine. But most of the team starts to doubt that those words are really Xavier. They think that Lucifer might be trying to trick them. Only Cyclops remains determined that it's Xavier's instructions that they heard and that they should listen. They arrive at the central chamber and see that Lucifer has captured Xavier. Lucifer spots them, and Jean uses her telekinesis to pull Lucifer's cape over his head so he can't see, and it turns out to be a surprisingly effective tactic. Angel decides that the machine has to be taken out and is fully convinced that what they thought was Xavier was really Lucifer misleading them. But as he flies away to start breaking things, Scott hits him in the back with his powers. Iceman can't believe what he just saw. He's mad at Scott for attacking their teammate, and he launches a giant ice boulder at Scott. Jean is standing by, torn, with both Scott and Bobby each trying to convince her to help him. But then one of the robots tries to go after Beast, and the X-Men put their arguments aside and take on the robots. The last group of robots attacks the team, and they're ducked behind an ice shield the Iceman built. And when the robots try to use their ray guns to shoot at the mutants, the ice deflects it and destroys the robots. Then Xavier reveals that he was the one to tell the team to leave the giant machine alone, because without the robots to operate it, Dominus cannot work and Lucifer's plan is foiled. Lucifer's leader, the Supreme One, video calls and learns of Lucifer's failure, so he banishes Lucifer to a nameless dimension and he starts to disappear while yelling for help from the X-Men. And the machine, Dominus, is taken away in the same beam of light that it arrived in. With their foe magically banished, Xavier explains to the team that they couldn't attack Dominus because it was indestructible, but without the robots, Lucifer would have no way to carry out his plan. So the team hops back in their hovercraft to go back home, with Xavier's old nemesis gone for good. For now, anyway. And that is the end of the story. I do love that Lucifer starts begging for help from the X-Men at the end, like he hasn't just captured them and threatened the entire planet. And he claims to have conquered several planets before Earth, but he just cannot get it together for this plot. He actually probably could have done it if he hadn't decided to take revenge on the X-Men at the same time. But, you know, villains are gonna do villain things. Scott appears to have fully returned to the team, although his concerns continue to go unaddressed on the page. Like Beast, he's drawn back into the team by his desire to help during a crisis. We don't see any resolution to the concerns that led him to leave. And it's a pretty sorry state of affairs. Scott is responsible and resolute, nearly to the point of being totally boring, and it's just sad that he's left to navigate that and all his feelings on his own. Maybe after the end of the issue, one of his other teammates, maybe Jean, steps in to talk to him and help him work through it, but we don't really know. I think it's fair to assume that Xavier does not do that. He seems to take the teenager's commitment to his cause for granted and not really consider what needs or concerns they might have. The only time so far I specifically remember him expressing concern for them was when their lives were in danger and he recognized that it was his fault. I feel like that was either the Juggernaut or the last Lucifer issue, but I'm not sure. Am I asking too much of a 60s comic book? Absolutely. Is that going to change my mind or make me stop? Definitely not. Scott does deserve better, and so do the rest of his team members. Next time, I'll cover a story about a new villain, Count Nefaria. He's got some interesting history, so I think it'll be a good one. Until then, check out the Instagram page at X-Men Unraveled for updates and pictures from the comics. Thank you for listening. If you are enjoying the show, please take a minute to leave a review wherever you listen. And thank you so much to those of you who've done so already. I appreciate it so much. But that is all for today. I will talk to you next time. And until then, maybe check in on your friends.